For October 27th, 2016, it's the Lullabot Podcast. Hey everybody, it's the Lullabot Podcast, episode 198. I'm Matt Cleave, senior developer of Lullabot. With me, alongside of me, I've got front-end dev Mike Herschel. Hey, Mike.
Hey, good afternoon, Matt Cleave.
Hey, Mike. So this is the Lullabot Podcast. We talk about things that Lullabot does, right?
Yes, sir, Matt. What is Lullabot?
Oh, good question. We're a strategy design and development company. We end up doing a lot of web development in the Drupal world.
Uh-huh. So what's Drupal?
Drupal is the content management system preferred by your dog, Yeller.
Yes. he does go to all the camps.
It's a PHP content management system and framework that's been around for, I don't know, something like 11 years?
Yeah, no, much longer than that.
Oh, you're right. Hang on. Jeez. I totally
like 2001. I'm going to say 15 years.
I've lost my position. I don't know. Time has shifted. But you know, one thing that's held true over Drupal over however many years it's been around, Mike, mm-hmm. is you hear people complain about how it's hard to use. Yeah?
Yeah, I have heard that before.
I've heard that for like, you know, the 7 or 8 years that I've been working with it.
And so today we're talking with some people to kind of fix that perception. And we have a couple Acquians with us.
I have a feeling that they're working a little harder to actually fix it as opposed to just fixing the perception though, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a bunch of smoke and mirrors, right?
I hope not. So we have the director of design at Acquia. He's contributed to many of Drupal user experience improvements that have happened recently, including the Spark distribution, the Drupal 8 toolbar, the D8 inline editing quick edit, responsive vertical tabs, and most recently, the settings tray module that implements the outside in. There's a buzzword. The outside in approach to admin that was blogged about by Dries. He's K. O'Leary UX on Twitter and TK O'Leary on Drupal.org. Joining us from Austin, Texas, it's Kevin O'Leary. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Glad you're here.
Also, from Acquia, a software engineer in the office of the CTO, involved with Drupal for around 9 years, hailing from the land of gorges, Ithaca, New York, and the maintainer of a number of modules that you've probably used, including WebForm conditional entity forms and block visibility groups. He is the co-host of the second best Drupal podcast on the internet, which is the Drupal Easy Podcast, known as Ted Bow on Drupal.org and Twitter. Welcome, Ted Bowman.
Well, I didn't think you thought that Modules Unraveled was the best podcast.
By far. We're like sitting down next to like sixth or seventh behind everybody. That's okay.
Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome.
So guys, let's just jump into it then. If we're talking about the user experience that's happening or the improvements to user experience that's happening out of the Acquia office right now, what's going on, Kevin?
Sure. So there's quite a lot going on. So, I mean, for the people who have read Dries's blog post on Outside In, you know, in the past six, 8 months or so, you'll know, you know, that he's been talking a lot about, you know, more direct approach to editing things in Drupal, bringing things right onto the front end and letting people like literally click on stuff and have it open up its configuration options and have them be able to make changes to those things without having to like understand what the information architecture and all the arcane, you know, nomenclature of Drupal is to be able to wade through the administrative pages and find the thing that they want. So, you know, following on those podcasts, which I contributed, you know, some design thinking to and some mock-ups, you know, we embarked on, you know, actually building this. So Ted and myself and Matt Grill and Angie and a bunch of other people, got down to work on actually building, you know, this settings tray module. And it's basically, a way to, you know, get configuration onto the front end of the site. And it, you know, utilizes some JavaScript to slide out a tray that has your configuration settings in it, for all kinds of stuff. So so with blocks, with pretty much any block that's on Drupal, you can open up the settings tray via contextual links or via triggering this the edit button, which used to be over on the left hand side of the of your toolbar, and now we've sort of, based on stuff we learned in the Minnesota usability study, we changed its color and made it more prominent, moved it over to the right hand side, so that people can click this and sort of get into this mode where they can hover over anything on the page, and it's going to be able to be clicked, and then it's going to open up this tray that you can then, you know, edit stuff from. So our hope is that, you know, our fond dream is that, you know, now that we've sort of kind of paved the path for this, you know, that people will start using this for all kinds of other things. Like, you know, so you guys probably have heard a lot about paragraphs module, or, you know, I mean, everyone is familiar with panels and panelizer, and there's lots and lots of other great, really, really well thought out and robust modules that could utilize this tray to actually bring some of their functionality right onto the front end, you know, of sites that have these modules. So that's really what I'm, you know, what I'm hoping for. And, you know, kind of our next, now that Drupal 8.2 has been released, what we're working on is trying to make that system more kind of more extensible and have a better developer experience, so people can add things into the tray via, you know, from any module. Maybe Ted, you could talk a little bit about, you know, our plans on sort of extending that and making it more of a, you know, robust core library.
Yeah. So right now the settings tray, we're using the dialog system that is people are probably familiar with from the, like, the modal dialogs that pop up. So like obviously in Drupal 7, a lot of modules use that. So we would like to make it as easy for modules to put stuff in the settings tray so that you can still see the front end of your site, and get away from sort of the overlay feel that the modal dialogs still have.
So when you're talking about Drupal 7 modal dialogs, I'm trying to picture that, Ted. Is that like the contextual menu that's in the corner, or is that like something that comes out of CTools, or what are you saying?
I can't remember if it's in CTools or it's in core in Drupal 7, but it's basically like you'll click some dialog. I'm trying to think what uses it.
Something like views, right? So if I go to configure a field within views, that opens up like a little modal. Is that what you're talking about?
That is exactly it, yeah.
And let's face it, like, I haven't built a website that didn't have CTools, so it's in core.
So I think that views is kind of a weird example because you're already on the admin side, but we're sort of trying to get modules, or make it easy for modules to do, is on if you're on the front end of the site. And I think like the panels IPE editor did this a bit in Drupal 7, where they had the configuration for layouts and stuff at the bottom of the page.
Yeah.
So I've been talking with Simon Mortensen on the panels team. I think he's working on IPE. And he's interested in seeing if he can have the his block configuration for panels-esque stuff show up also in the settings tray.
Oh, you know what I was just thinking? I was thinking, you know, have you ever tried to show a user how to use, you know, Node Queue or Entity Queue or something like that?
Yeah, stuff like that would be great.
Just to pull that out would be fantastic.
Yeah.
So let me. I've seen this in action before, so let me kind of visualize that for people that haven't. So basically, you'll be on the front end of the web of your website that you're developing, and you'll be logged in as an admin, and at that point, you'll want to configure something, right? So, like, say for example, if you want to add a link to your main menu, or something similar, normally you would have to kind of navigate to the back end. You would need to know where to go, which would be, you know, several clicks. And at that point, you would have to kind of hit the add button and do everything. So what Ted and Kevin are talking about right here is you would hit a configure button that would be something similar to a contextual link. And at that point, a little tray would pop out from the right-hand side, and you would have the option to add your add or edit or rearrange your menu right there. Am I missing something, or does that sound right?
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
That's kind of outside in from the high level, right? That's the goal of the outside.
The other thing that we added is that edit button, which was already there, but then, like Kevin said, we highlighted and moved over to the left side, is that when you click that, what used to happen the contextual links module would do this. It would just surface all your contextual links so you didn't have to hover over them so you could see where they were. So now if you enable the settings tray module, it actually puts you in a more sort of, it changes you into this larger edit mode where everything that's a block becomes clickable, and pretty much everything on a Drupal 8 site is a block, so that you can just click a block anywhere and it'll open up the tray if it's a block configuration. And then if it's a quick edit module style thing, say you're looking at the node page and you click on the body of the text, it would actually pop open the quick edit toolbar. So basically the idea is once you go into this edit mode, we disable the links, we disable forms, and you're strictly like, oh, I'm editing my site now. I'm editing configuration. Maybe I'm editing content depending on the page that you're on. And it makes you sort of also think that you have to go up and click editing again to get out of the edit mode. So it makes you sort of, in a sense, flip to an administration tasks from the front end, still being able to see your site on the front end.
Yeah. Gotcha. And you can critically, you can click anywhere on the block. So like, because links are disabled, because like inputs are disabled in your site, you can just click on the block itself, and it's going to open up its configuration. You don't have to sort of find the contextual link and go to the drop down and click the quick edit. It's much more immediate and direct.
Okay.
And one of the other things that we added is that, so if say you're looking at the menu, a menu block in Drupal 8, and without the quick edit or without the settings tray module, you click configure block, you're taken back to the block administration screen, to that block form, so you can edit like the placement of the block and everything. But you can't actually edit the menu, which we're thinking a lot of people, you know, if they're new to Drupal and they click on something that's a menu, they want to edit the menu. So we're trying to connect blocks to relevant configuration.
That's way too logical, Ted. I don't know if people get it. You're gonna screw up with all the backwards Drupal development years that I have compiled.
And so one of the things that's in that Tim Plunkett did was allow blocks and other plugins to have multiple configuration forms, so that basically the menu block can say, well, when I'm in off canvas, also show the actual menu. Or if you click on the site branding, when you click on the site branding, also show the site name, because the idea is if you click on the site name, you very well might want to change the site name. Mm-hmm. So there are probably a lot more opportunities in contrib that contrib might actually want to say, well, when I'm going to surface this block on the front end in the settings tray, I'm going to want somebody to see some related configuration.
Gotcha. So do you guys have documentation set up for contrib module developers to kind of like implement, you know, the settings tray yet? Or is that just something where they kind of need to look at, you know, how the current, you know, code base is set up?
Yeah. So right now I can't remember if the documentation page on the handbook actually has documentation on how a module developer would do it. Mm-hmm. And part of that is because it's an experimental module and we're actually maybe changing the way that works.
Yeah.
Because being an experimental module, we can break backwards compatibility until it gets to beta. And I would like to be to have it be very easy for somebody, pretty much as easy it is to make a modal link, where you basically just add an attribute to the link and say, you know, either off canvas or say dialogue type off canvas, so that the module developer who's doing this doesn't have to think, well, I want it positioned to the right and I want certain behaviors. They would just see the behaviors that core has and say, oh, I want that too. So that it gets a sort of united feel across core and contrib. And one of the things we're trying to, you know, help with is that you know, there was a lot of innovation, say, like in panels with that IPE tray and stuff like that, is that we would like sort of, as you install different modules, that you have the same sort of feel. Maybe they use it slightly differently. They put different kind of stuff in there, but the way it looks to the user and maybe the way they get to it is similar.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, you know, from a kind of a user expectation standpoint.
Yeah.
But you're also making assumptions, which you have to do at some point, right? Drupal tries to be flexible, but needs to make assumptions so that it's useful. One thing I heard you say, Kevin, earlier, and that I'd like to hear a little bit more about is like user testing. How are we knowing what users want?
Right. Yeah, that's a really good question. So, you know, so when I work on mockups and designs and develop sort of new ideas like this, I tend to try to test them as I go as much as I possibly can. So I'll do what I call sort of hallway testing, where I'll mock something up and then I'll walk it around and I'll show it to people. I usually go over to the marketing department at Acquia, which tends to be a really good sort of hotbed of like UX confusion, I know that they're going to, and actually that's not fair. I mean, marketing people are used to using kind of SaaS tools that are designed for very specific use cases and which can have really, really good, you know, usability because they only have to focus on the one thing that they do, not be flexible and do lots of things like Drupal does. So they're used to, you know, using kind of pretty slick and smooth UIs. So if I show things like this that we're working on to them, they're gonna immediately kind of point out things that are not usable. So that's one level. But then once we get to a point where we have, really well kind of built out prototypes or proofs of concept that are actually in Drupal, we've been doing a lot of more usability tests, and actually CEPERS in Hungary, in Budapest, has been helping us out a lot. And doing a lot of usability tests, which has been awesome because they just sort of stepped up and said, "Hey, we want to do this. We want to really be a key participant in the process of making Drupal more usable." And they're really doing a lot of really great work over there. So as we go, as we add new things, we're going to test them. Actually, CEPERS is also working on, you know, adding new, doing new stuff for media.
Nice.
And some people over there are testing out some stuff with that as well. There's some good new movement around adding a new media browser to Drupal Core as an experimental module.
That's great news. There's been a lot of, I remember in a lot of the surveys, media has always been kind of a highlight of what people would like to see within Drupal as a better media handling experience.
Well, that's been true for many years.
I know that's been true for many years, and it hasn't been happening.
Yeah, there's been a lot of movement in media around, you know, really, resolving sort of the underlying, plumbing issues of media. Is it going to be like file entity or media entity or, you know, all that kind of stuff. And they've done a lot of work in making that really robust, but what needs to be done now really has nothing to do with that. It's more about, you know, the experience of adding media, you know, having a way that you can browse your media that looks more like sort of best practice, that has a nice, way of viewing a bunch of thumbnails and, you know, a responsive way and being able to sort of choose, being able to do things like multi-upload, et cetera. And making that unified, which is kind of similar to what we're doing with settings tray as well, in that, you know, all the media modules in the media landscape in Drupal 7 had different kinds of UIs for adding media via the WYSIWYG or for adding media to the front end. You had like Scald, which had its own kind of tray that opened out and let you add things to the front end. And so the idea of, you know, of the what we're going to be calling it's the off canvas library, right, Ted?
Name to be undetermined, but off canvas library, yeah, probably. Yeah.
Is that we have this tray, and it's not really, it's not necessarily tied to the sort of, to the methods for actually getting the form content. in. It's more about, here's a kind of a universal dialogue solution that is a tray that slides in from off canvas. So if any module wants to put, you know, stuff into it, they can use that. And those experiences will all be unified and the same across Drupal. You won't have five different kinds of trays or JavaScript solutions that bring in things in all kinds of wonky different ways, which you had in 7 and still have to a certain extent in 8.
Yeah, so you don't have like a different, you have the menu sliding in from the left, the settings tray from the right, the IPE from the bottom, maybe the, you know, the normal admin bar at the top. That would be pretty,
yeah,
pretty bad.
And each one of them using its own JavaScript library.
Of course, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, because to coordinate all that would just be too logical, yeah. So is there an official Drupal user experience team or initiative?
So yeah, that's a good question. There is a there's a regular meeting, right?
Mm-hmm.
Actually, there are two regular meetings. There's one U.S. time and there's one European time. Those happen on Tuesdays.
Okay.
The time is so Eastern time. The UX meeting is at 3:00 Eastern time in the US. The European one is I'm not sure exactly on the time of the European one. It's later. It follows like 9 hours later, I think.
Yeah, and we can if this is published, we'll throw it in the show notes so our users can check it out.
Awesome. Yeah.
Did you say if this is published?
I'm still on the fence of publishing this podcast, Ted.
Oh my god. Oh, yeah. I might just take off now then.
That's funny. So those meetings are happening, and they're, you know, we had scheduled meetings before for UX, but these ones are really being much better attended, both mm-hmm. in the US and in Europe. Usually there's about 6 or 7 people at every meeting, and anyone is welcome. It's not a sort of a dedicated team where you have to be there at every meeting or you're assigned things in a sprint or anything like that. We have a UX-focused team as part of the Octo team, which Ted and I are both participating in.
Octo being the office of the CTO, a division of Acquia, right?
Right, exactly. So, Octo is basically, it's Dries's team within Acquia. And there's like, you know, I don't know exactly how many of us, 10 plus people in the Octo team right now.
It sounds like there should be 8, but yeah.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? Yeah. There's been a lot of jokes about that. And actually, we have a little icon in Slack that is a little octopus with like 8 legs. It's funny. It's a little Drupal-y octopus.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. So we are actually, you know, dedicating time, Acquia time to it, a significant amount of Acquia time, but there's lots of other people participating as well. And the more who do that, the better. And so, you know, obviously there's the stalwarts who have been there, like Roy and Bojan. But, you know, there's a lot of other people. Gabor Hoichi has been putting a lot of effort into this as well, making sure the meetings are organized and well attended. The other thing that we've been doing with these meetings is that we've been recording them because the meetings happen in Google Hangouts. So we have their public Google Hangouts, but then they're also recorded. So you can go back and you can look at any of the previous meetings and see what we talked about. And one of the really cool things about these meetings is that if there are issues to be committed that are in the UX if you filter all of our open issues by usability, and there are issues that are RTBC, we have like a commit spree at the end of the meeting where we'll just like, Angie will just commit. At one meeting, I think we committed like 5 different, like,
wow,
different issues to Drupal core. So stuff is happening like really fast. And that's great. I mean, a lot of these commits are like, they're quite small. They're, you know, they're little change the affordances of this button or, you know, different kinds of things like that, but they're all important, and to be able to get things done at a more rapid pace is great. The other thing that's happening that's really interesting is we now have the ideas queue. Did you guys know about this, or is this?
I learned about it in Dublin.
I don't know anything about it.
Yeah, so we have a new queue that is separate from the issue queue, using the same issue queue tools of Drupal.org, but it's a different queue that has slightly different steps, and it's the ideas queue, and it's for basically I have an idea, right, for something that could improve Drupal, whether it's an improvement to existing usability somewhere, or whether it's just a completely new feature, additional feature, or if it's like we need to remove this. Like a lot of people are saying we should remove, for instance, color module, which I think is still pretty cool, but some people think it's kind of superfluous. But so there's a lot of opportunity there to get in and propose an idea, and then it goes through the stages of where it's just a concept, and then it becomes a prototype, and then gets tested, and then after it sort of graduates from the ideas queue, it becomes a live issue, in the actual queue where people are making patches. That's the difference between the ideas queue and the regular issue queue, is that nobody is coding anything in the ideas queue.
But people still are like doing the designs and wireframes, if that matters. Is that correct? And that's happening in the ideas queue?
Yeah, exactly. People are doing designs, wireframes, prototypes, architectural plans, discussing, usability testing, debating whether, how it should be done, and, or whether it should be done. And that's great. And there are already a whole bunch of issues in the ideas queue, at least 40 or more. So that's exciting for me. And it's great that we have that, because in the past people have been like, well, if I have an idea for Drupal, what do I do with it? And people say things like, oh, well, go to the issue queue and add the idea in the issue queue, or else, in our duocracy way, just code it yourself. But if you're a designer, you're not going to be the person who's going to be able to write a patch for that. And then oftentimes what would happen is, a designer would have an idea and would put it into the issue queue and for discussion, like, do you think this is a good idea? And some core developer, gets really excited about it and says, awesome, I'm going to build that. And then it's done. And then it's a patch. And it never got tested on anybody, And we don't really know whether it's going to be, more usable or less usable. So, it's good from the perspective of it gives people a place that they can get ideas out there for discussion, and also sort of forestalls that like jump to the conclusion of code it right away before we really know whether it's gonna be workable.
Cool. So over the years, Drupal has come to be known as having something called a Drupal WTF, often where you have some sort of UX issue that is causing you problems. I would love to hear, Ted and Kevin, what your biggest Drupal UX issues are, coming up right after this.
Welcome back to the Drupal Easy Podcast. This is Mike Anello, alongside co-host Ted Bowman. And today we're...
I don't know what you think you're doing. We're having you on here to talk about Florida Drupal Camp.
Hi, Mike.
This isn't your podcast.
You know what? I was sleepwalking through my own podcast, and I must have got confused. That's what happened.
We're talking with Mike Anello from the Drupal Easy Podcast, and Mike is also an organizer of Florida Drupal Camp, which is the sponsor of the show today. So Florida Drupal Camp coming up. Now's the time to get excited, right?
Absolutely, yeah. So, your Mike and this Mike, me Mike, are two of the main organizers of Florida Drupal Camp 2017. We've got, Mike, have we announced all of our featured speakers yet, or two of them? What's going on with that?
Yeah. So we announced the first two.
Wait, when is Florida Drupal Camp?
February
17th, 18th, and 19th. We're going to have trainings on the 17th, which is a Friday, including an introduction to Drupal training. Saturday and Sunday will be sessions, and we're going to have three featured speakers. The first one will be fellow Lullabot Helena Zubkow talking about accessibility and a bunch of cool stuff. And Mike, would you like to announce the second featured speaker?
Sure. We are super happy to announce that we have Megan Sanicky from the Drupal Association. The executive director of the Drupal Association is going to come down to Florida and give a presentation about what the DA does, you know, why we love them, and you know what they're going to do for us in the future and how we can help.
Yep, and the biggest draw, of course, of Florida DrupalCamp, besides Mr. Mike here, is that it's in February, and Florida, it's warm in Florida, you know, so you can make your plans right now, set up your budgets, bring the family, because there might be a theme park or two in Orlando, and this is our, what, ninth year?
Yeah, I think it's our ninth year doing it. We kind of have it wired at this point. We always have great sponsors, great venue, great party, great sessions. I mean, it's just... it's a really fun community event.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Mike. And get the hell off of our podcast.
Well, I was about to say thank you right back, but I'm not sure if I want to say thank you anymore.
So Florida Drupal Camp in February in Orlando sounds like a great place to be.
Website is www.fldrupal.camp.
And if you're a fan of 1980s video games, there's a special surprise on the website for you as well.
Welcome back. We're on the Lullabot Podcast, and we have a couple Aquians, Mr. Kevin O'Leary and Mr. Ted Bowman, talking about Drupal usability and UX and everything about making Drupal easier to use.
That's right. We're gonna ask them what their Drupal WTFs were, right?
Yeah, but before we do that, Matt, what does WTF stand for?
Well, I'm not sure we can, you know, it's one of those words that starts with F and ends with UCK. It's Drupal, where's the fire truck? And it's a problem that's so bad that you need to call the fire department to come assist you with your issue.
That's the most creative thing I've heard on the podcast ever.
You're welcome.
That's pretty good. All right. So Drupal, where's the fire truck? Ted, do you have any favorite Drupal WTFs?
So sticking with the usability theme, so training people with Drupal, like once they figure out that you can add fields to everything and what fields are and how you can change the display, that's like an aha moment for people. Mm-hmm. But the fact that when you're looking at a form, say a node edit or add form, there's no real indication how you would add anything new to that form. That's probably like my usability WTF.
It can make sense.
Yeah, that's tricky. I get it. Like, because it's two totally different locations.
Yeah, and there's no like segue to like, oh, and if you would like to, you know, add something or have more data inputs here, go. You have no idea where.
Yeah. Obviously, that would be permissions, you know, assisted, right? You wouldn't have to that link for somebody who can't actually make changes to the fields. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, just if you had the permissions to manage those fields.
Yeah,
but even deeper than that, people don't really. So I was showing there's a designer who works at Acquia who works with Dries on his keynotes, which I actually used to do myself. And you know, she doesn't know a lot about Drupal. She's an awesome designer, but you know, as we were going through and looking at the UI, it suddenly dawned on her: oh, you can actually edit the screen that people use to create the content.
Yeah.
And it was like this moment of, oh my God, it's like a system that lets you edit your content, but it also lets you create the system that lets you edit your content. And I think that it takes a long time for people to just kind of even get to that point where they realize that that's possible. So, you know,
yeah,
that's like kind of a WTF.
Field group is my favorite module for backend, you know, content creation, because if you can organize your different fields into logical groups, it makes everything so much easier for your content admin.
The node form is themeable too. I was on a project a while back that really did some heavy work on making sure that content entry was useful to the administrators and like handy. And all sorts of little niceties we were able to add in and make it work great. It was one of those things that was like, it's not, no. It was a bunch of one-off stuff for a project that ended up getting shelved by the company and probably like three people in the corporation know it ever existed, but it was really nice.
Cool.
See, that happens a lot. There's a really good like usability work done, and it all lives inside of somebody's code base, and it never gets contributed back.
It was all pretty particular, though. It was like, you know, that we need to make sure that phone fields act a certain way, or, you know, and you could have, I suppose, abstracted out ways to make it useful in the contrib space, but it didn't.
If you're a responsible community member, which you are not.
Yeah, well, sometimes.
I actually am a responsible community member. I gave a talk at DrupalCon Portland about backend usability, and it was a very hands-on talk as opposed to a conceptual talk. And it talked about like all different types of modules that you can use to like edit your backend forms and stuff like that. Like a lot of the stuff that I talked about was maybe taking out options. You know, like taking out like if you're not used to promoted to a front page checkbox, yank that out. If you're not using the, you know, whatever vertical tab, yank that out and stuff like that. And so I talked a lot about that. Of course, that was Drupal 7, but looking back at it, it's amazing kind of how much work you have to put into the backend admin form to make it super usable. But then again, like Drupal as a system is like so flexible and it can fit so many types of use cases. I guess it's impossible to make it work perfect for everybody. Although Drupal 8 is just so much better, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially with the built-in WYSIWYG and edit and all that type of stuff.
Yeah.
So we could have more sane defaults.
Yeah. We were talking about WTFs. So Kevin, was that your answer with the WTF?
Actually, I have lots of WTFs. You know, the one that I thought about when you first asked the question was, was nomenclature stuff, because nomenclature stuff in Drupal is that's really the stuff that people are like that people get a quizzical look on their face. Like views and, you know, nodes. And I know that we took node out of most of the UI, but, you know, we've been sort of creeping in the direction of having better, you know, better nomenclature, but there's still a lot of things in there. And the one that really screamingly sticks out to me is in certain visibility conditions and pages, you'll get this one called this string that says, negate the condition.
Yeah.
What in I don't even think that some developers can wrap their head around that. And
that should be
They've
a
gotta think about it.
That could totally be like a pretty awesome t-shirt. Negate the condition.
Negate the
Drupal.
Condition. What, yeah, exactly. We should make that t-shirt.
You've heard it here first. You got to give me royalties now, which I'm sure, be a free t-shirt.
It would be awesome.
Let's make them for DrupalCon Baltimore.
Yeah. It's a good idea.
Yeah.
Another thing is view mode versus display mode, and
oh yeah, well those are like anti patterns. Those are things where we say one thing in one place and another thing in another place, and we really need to eradicate all the anti patterns. Yoroi and Bojan have been working on doing this for a long time, trying to establish standards, and get the interface text consistent across the board. But, you know, in addition to being consistent, it also needs to be simpler and more everyday language.
Mm-hmm.
We use words that are just a little bit too, esoteric, unique to also our community, and not even sort of across the board kind of, developer language, but like just Drupalisms.
But geez, like, I mean, it's so complicated. Like in web development, right, you have a node. So is node, a programming language? Is it a DOM node within your browser? Is it a Drupal node? I'm sure there's another thing. And don't even get me started on features. Like, holy shit,
Yeah. And a lot of the nomenclature stuff gets wrapped up because people get hung up on like on semantic meanings. Like they're like, we don't want to call it a page because this is not a page-based CMS.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what the user really understands is page, okay? So even though it might not exactly match the definition of page in terms of an HTML, page, let's give the user something that they can grasp and latch onto.
Yep.
Well, I think a lot of those struggles come from contrib versus core. So I think the negate the condition actually comes out of ctools or panels or something like that.
It totally does come out of ctools.
Like I was thinking of the word context, which ends up being overloaded in so many different directions. And like the context module exists, but then ctools does its own thing when having panels contexts. And words are hard.
Yeah. But that the ctools found its way into core when we ported views to core.
Yep.
So that negate the condition thing. We can thank Earl for that.
Okay. So thank you, Earl Miles. So I have one, and this is kind of more of a minor thing, but I would just like to see drop down menus for the admin menu in core, you know. And I know there's, you know, was it the admin menu or something module that you just enable and it does it, but why is that not in core, you know? And and the whole like filtering that the admin bar based on what you're like as you're typing and stuff. I seen a demo of Backdrop and do that, and it's just amazing. It's just great usability. It's just something that should be in core. And you know, looking at the ideas queue that we talked about earlier, there's, you know, issues to get that done, but I don't know. That's just one of those things that I would really like to see.
If I remember correctly, I saw Jen give a presentation on Backdrop, and the admin menu with the search involved was actually taken from a random branch of the admin menu module in Drupal, which has that capability in it already, which I think is kind of interesting because nobody's ever seen it work that way in Drupal, really.
Yeah, I mean, I had designs, you know, I had designs for a search field inside of, inside of toolbar module and for dropdowns in toolbar module, you know, when I first designed it like 4 years ago, before we put it into core. And, you know, there's only so many things that you can get in with the scope of, you know, what's doable within the time that we had. And those things didn't get in. But I think now with semantic versioning and you know, the ability to get these things in, there's no reason why we can't get admin toolbar is the module you're talking about. Admin toolbar into core, for 8.3, that would be awesome. I would love to see that. I would also love to see coffee module, which is the one that you're talking about, where you can just search for stuff throughout the Drupal UI. That would make it so much easier for people to navigate around and find the stuff that they want to find.
Yeah. You mentioned semantic versioning and kind of switching gears here. It seems like there has been just like a whole bunch of momentum and just like getting stuff done, not just necessarily in usability, but just like stuff into Drupal, you know. Is that because of semantic versioning? Is there just something else going on in the community? I know we've talked about like experimental modules and stuff like that. Do you guys have any thoughts on that?
It seems like a combination of the two. I mean, I haven't been involved with core development that long, but, you know, I sort of follow it from the outside a lot. And, you know, when Drupal 7 came out, we opened up the Drupal 8 branch and everybody starts to work on that. So there wasn't really like I think the policy was that we couldn't get new stuff in for 7. Actually, now we can still get stuff in for 7. Yeah, I think the fact that people see like a shorter time frame to actually, well, if I work on this, it could, you know, it could maybe get in experimental or non-experimental in 6 months is just a lot more of a motivation versus, you know, it may or may not get in because we're going to re-architect the whole thing. And you never know 5 years down the line if the thing that I worked real hard is actually going to still be there. Where obviously not everything is going to get in that people are going to try, but at least you'll have a better idea sooner whether that's going to happen or not.
Yeah, and the 6 month turnaround, you know, is like to your question about is this because of, the minor releases? And yeah, absolutely it is, because, you know, now we can get stuff in. Now we can get stuff in incrementally, and people don't have to wait for like 3 years or however long it is before a major version. And that has kind of gotten people excited again about contributing. And I think what we've been able to do is to sort of latch onto that excitement and channel it with things like the ideas queue and things like, you know, just getting more people to come to the UX meetings and having the UX meetings more regularly, and there's more attendance. The last one that we just had, there was like 11 people there, which is unheard of for these UX meetings, and people are doing lots of really cool things.
That's pretty awesome. So let's talk pre-installed content.
Well, one of my Drupal WTFs that I think we talked about on the previous podcast, Mike, was that that message that you get when you first install Drupal and you end up at /node because that's your default homepage and it says you have no content. And yes. A new user looks at that and says, well, that's nice. Now what? Like, how do I change that? I want to delete
this
that.
This is a great segue, Matt.
Yeah. So pre-installed content is something that I've heard might be being worked on.
Yes, indeed, it is being worked on. So, you know, I kind of resurrected this issue. I was a big fan of the Snowman initiative, and you know, and I thought that was a really awesome kind of direction to go in.
What is the Snowman initiative?
Yeah, that came back. That goes all the way back to like DrupalCon Chicago, right? Several years ago.
It was an initiative that you know that Jeff actually
Jeff Eaton.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, was kind of heavily involved in, and it's basically around, you know, creating example content and creating sort of different example versions of Drupal in kind of different verticals, different industry mm-hmm. verticals or sort of content verticals, and it also was kind of a little bit tied to, you know, this idea of that when you install Drupal, you'd be able to kind of go and choose from a wide range of sort of profiles that you could install, which is kind of the framework, more of the framework initiative. The issue for add example content to Drupal core has been an open issue for 10 years. So this goes back a long way. But basically what we've done is we've kind of resurrected that. And a lot of the people who were sort of involved in it, involved in Snowman, involved in other things, people like Lee Rollins, who actually I believe is the maintainer of the example content module, which is a module that lets you add example content on install to a new site, are involved in this initiative to get example content into Drupal. And it's made a lot of progress. We're having weekly meetings now, and we are Lee has set up a sandbox. We've decided to make the example content map to the examples that already are in our user guide of the farmers market. So okay. The Drupal user guide walks people through how to do various things, you know, in this sort of fictional farmers market site. Well, we're just going to actually make that site. So now, you know, we'll be totally in sync with both the learning process of Drupal and the experience of Drupal when you first install it. So the idea is to make it an experimental install profile that it'll say something like, you know, you could have standard or you could install Drupal with example content, and it's going to be this farmers market site.
So
go ahead.
The example content would not be the default install profile. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah. So there's an issue to create something called an experimental install profile. Uh-huh. So like an experimental module, we'd have this experimental profile, and then that would be the profile that had example content in it. And in fact, Lowry Erskola and some other people, in the front end community also have a issue that's being worked on in parallel to create a new theme for that as well. So you'll have a whole different experience. You'll have a new core theme that is themed specifically to the example content that you're going to be seeing. So it gives the user a real kind of an impression of what a real site in Drupal can look like, and not something that's generic that they have to use their imagination.
And so the example content would have like field references or entity references and all that type of stuff. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. So that's the other thing is that, you know, you have things, you have examples of stuff that you don't get examples of in the core, in the standard install profile right now.
Yeah.
That's more complex, you know, content modeling and construction, like views and entity reference and taxonomy references and things like that.
Cool. That sounds pretty amazing. You know, there's definitely a learning curve coming into Drupal, but just kind of seeing everything, you know, fit together, starting off with the farmer's market already built seems pretty awesome.
I'm trying to imagine how that would actually be used. Is that something that, so if I have this example install profile, that has a bunch of content and I can then, so is its purpose more of an educational thing? Like I can then peel back the layers and see how it was built, or does it give me a starting point that I could actually build my simple website that's similar to this farmer's market example website?
That's a really good question. And, and it's one that comes up a lot. In this instance, it's kind of a twofold purpose in that it because it maps to the user guide, it would be a way for somebody who had never used Drupal before to literally go through and look at the way things were done, you know, to have an actual example in configuration of exactly, you know, what the finished product looks like for the task that they're trying to learn. And then the other thing is it provides out of the box a way for people to see, you know, and kind of road test Drupal and see, well, what is it capable of? What are the things that Drupal can do, which, you know, the standard install profile really doesn't do. So if somebody's kind of just, you know, spinning up Drupal on simplytest.me or installing it, you know, locally to try it out, they really get a sense of what's possible rather than something that's, you know, more sparse and not really, very fleshed out.
Sure.
That's a really, really nice way to put it.
Sparse.
Yeah. And then, you know, I mean, we do admit the fact, you know, or the possibility that, you know, some people are going to take this and they're going to actually like just then try to, change this profile into their actual site.
Yep.
So we're doing some stuff with the actual content model that makes it more broad. Like, mm-hmm. for example, so there's a vendor content type in the profile. Well, what we've done is we've made that a organization content type, and then mm-hmm. it has a taxonomy term of vendor, which comes from a taxonomy of organization types. So yeah. So you could go and you could say, oh well, I don't want vendors. What I really want is this other thing, and it has enough flexibility for you to kind of pivot it into another direction if you wanted to do that. That's not the intent of it, really, but there's no way we can stop people from doing that. So we want to make them not be able to shoot themselves in the foot if they do that.
I said the farmers markets who want to use Drupal are going to love this.
And actually, in fact, KJ, Keith, who's one of the guys who's actually going to be helping to prepare and write some of the content and populate it, is going to be shooting photography at in an actual farmer's market near him in Winchester, England. So we're going to have like, there's going to be sort of real live kind of stuff that really maps mm-hmm. to a real farmer's
market. There's the danger of people sabotaging that issue who just want core people to make a site for them. Are you going to see somebody with like a stereo shopping? I really think a stereo shop should be the content.
I'm going to get there and start doing that.
It sounds like some of this UX work is actually reinforcing the question that's been asked for many years in the Drupal world. It's who is Drupal for?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what? That's also true. And it is a question that kind of keeps perennially coming back. And so interestingly, I thought that this would come up in the meeting that we had in Dublin where we resuscitated this issue and a bunch of people came, you know, to weigh in on it. So I had prepared beforehand a kind of a graph where I had gone through, I'd used the Acquia crawler that crawls the entire internet and finds all the Drupal sites. Mm-hmm. And I found out what all of the Alexa, industry classifications of the Drupal sites were. And, you know, and I made a graph that said, well, here they are. These are the industries that are using Drupal. And it's not a surprising thing. It's what we know. It's education, it's government, it's nonprofits. And it's a very large organizations.
And soon to be farmers markets.
But, you have to start with something simple to get across the basic ideas. You know, if we started with like, something like World Economic Forum, you know, that it's it's going to be kind of it's not going to be more easily applicable to other people's use cases.
Absolutely. So you mentioned install profiles before. I saw this issue pop up, and I think it was Larry Escola's issue, where he was talking about making install profiles downloadable. So during the install process, and I personally thought this was just like a fantastic idea, and I probably need to get in there and maybe comment and say something about this. But the whole idea is, during, you know, the install process, you can say, I want to see what's available, and maybe I will see a church, you know, install profile, or a Stereo Shop install profile for Ted, or a World Economic, you know, or a, you know, Economic Forum, you know, install profile, or whatever. Do you have any thoughts on that? Short of, you know, I don't even know if you've seen that issue.
I have that. So that's kind of what I was alluding to before in the sort of platform initiative. Uh-huh. So Lee Rowlands, Laroland, is also is also really interested in this idea of having install profiles, having kind of an install profile browser. Mm-hmm. You know, via the install process. I think it's an awesome idea. I think it's got a lot of there's a huge number of technical hurdles to getting it to happen, and then there's also the hurdle of, you know, getting it into core. I think it may be it may be something that could live in contrib. Like, you could have a sort of a distribution of distributions kind of an idea. That you could have a distribution where the distribution itself was able to install or browse a lot of install profiles. I think it's something that if you tried to get it into core, there's going to be a huge bike shed. People are going to be, and in fact, there already has been, because people have already tried to.
I'm going to get in there and bike shed it. I honestly think it should be in core. The thing is, if it's in contrib, I don't believe anybody would actually use it, you know, because the whole idea of it is that, you know, people, when you're a new person coming to Drupal, you don't know that there is a distribution. And I mean, a distribution of distributions, then you definitely don't know that exists. Coming.
That's a good point.
Going through the install profile and maybe having some type of question, say like, you know, an option to browse online install profiles with maybe a quick, you know, description of what an install profile is. You, you know, select that option, you do some live typing, and you type in church or Stereo Shop or something like that. And then bam. You know, you see it right there, and you're like, all right, well, let me check that out. To me, that's like that would be a very common use case. But then again, that's just my own thoughts on that.
But also, somebody has to maintain those distributions and, you know, keep them up. Just, I mean, it seems like a start would be just better promoting the distributions that we have on Drupal.org. And if we don't have ones that are worthy of being promoted, then we're a long way from this idea of like actually being able to download and then use an install profile.
But I think it's also a little bit of a chicken and an egg. You know, maybe people would be more likely to create distributions if they had this use case of people, you know, downloading it during the install process. Because I think people would like really check that out, you know.
But Mike, who's going to build that, right? I'm leading you into this question. So who's going to build that, Mike?
Ted.
Okay, fine. Okay, so Ted's a great example. He has a technical ability to do it. He has the knowledge, you know, the skills to apply that. He's got the stick-to-itiveness to be able to drive it through the issue queue. Uh-huh. But why does Ted care about that? Like, Drupal has all been about, like, scratching your itch and, like, you know, contributing back the things that are important to you, the tools that are useful to you. And a core developer isn't going to give a crap about spooling up a church website quickly.
So I can tell you what. So are you asking who's going to build who's going to build the infrastructure and the code, the core code during the install process, or who's going to build the distributions?
Well, I think you could probably find people that are interested enough in building the distributions because they've, you know, have that niche.
So you're asking who's going to do the core work and the Drupal.org work, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's tricky.
So obviously Drupal.org work would just get done by the DA. Because, you know, they'd have nothing to do. They're way overstaffed.
Yeah.
They have way too much money. And they're just sitting around, just, you know, sipping martinis.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think that's exactly how it works. Yeah.
Yes.
The people who do want to get this platform initiative into core, like Lee, are pushing forward on it. So, I mean, there's definitely people who are willing to, you know, take time and spend time and make it happen. My point was that I think there might be resistance. But the other thing is that, you know, the concept of distributions from Drupal 7 is not necessarily, you know, the only way to go about these kinds of things. So, you know, with configuration management in Drupal 8, we don't have to do this all at the install level, you know, and at the point of install to get all this stuff in. We can use features module. People can install, you know, a feature that involves a, you know, content model that has, you know, entity references and content types and views and all that kind of stuff. And it's not necessarily a distribution, because a distribution, you know, as I, you know myself very well from working on commons and other distributions, is a mountain of technical debt to manage and maintain. Whereas, you know, a simple install profile with a content model in it that's like a feature that people could access from, say, a features browser, which is another idea that the features team has looked at, you know, over the years, is much more lightweight and much more, you know, and much more manageable, and can be done after the install process is over. You could just install standard and then go browse features, you know. So that's another direction for that, but essentially one that offers really the same thing.
You blew my mind when you brought up config management, though. That's one of those things that I hadn't thought of yet in this context. Like, that makes perfect sense. That would be great.
Yeah, I mean, for example, that's exactly how I made the content model for the, you know, I don't want to put a cursor into like a YAML file and know when I'm creating bad white space or not, you know. So I just downloaded features module, created the feature with all the example content from the user guide. And then exported it as an install profile and sent it over to Lee. And he's like, wow, this is all done. And I'm like, well, yeah, I just configured it. I didn't like actually write any code. But, you know, it's pretty easy to do that kind of stuff now. So
I think part of, though, I don't think the technical reason why distributions maybe didn't take off as much as people thought, or I think the reason they didn't is not solely technical, but I think it's also because I don't think it's been proven that enough people really want to install Drupal and have somebody make so many more decisions for them right up front, where, you know, a lot of the reason you choose Drupal is you want to make something that nobody's made before, and it's very unique to your circumstances. And I feel like before we actually change core, we should, you know, do some sort of testing on Drupal.org where we really promote, like, here, you know, because we could do these install profiles simply by making them distribution like. We don't have to, you know, they don't have to be exactly like distributions. But if we put them on Drupal.org, where when you're prompted right when you download Drupal to say, hey, well, you may want one Drupal tailored for this or that industry, you know, if we do that first and we actually see that, well, yeah, you know, everybody's choosing these other install profiles from Drupal.org, I think that would be a lot quicker way to test the idea that this is actually needed and wanted in the larger community versus changing core and putting something in that we're possibly never going to take out.
Yeah, it's kind of like a lean approach. I think that's smart. You know, it's like a way to get it. We could possibly do it as experimental as well, you know. But yeah, I think I do want to challenge a little bit one thing you said, though, Ted, around you know, people want to make something that is completely unique. Nothing is completely unique. One of the things that people in the Drupal community say, well, you know, we don't want to make pre-packaged things because it's not going to work for everybody. So people come to Drupal because they want something that's completely, you know, bespoke and made from scratch. Almost any kind of site that you could build in the world, you know, could benefit from having a base content model that you started from and didn't have to configure absolutely everything for. You know, things do neatly fall into, or most things do neatly fall into, you know, categories, and many things fall into like really kind of pretty strict categories. Like if I have like an insurance agency, you know, I mean, almost every insurance agent in the world is going to have exactly the same needs for their content model.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that, you know, I've said like the chicken and the egg type thing, but I think the reason why people choose Drupal for one-offs is because it's difficult. It's more difficult to use Drupal for common things than say WordPress. You know, like if I go to WordPress and I download, you know, an extension for real estate, you know, it will create, you know, all these content types and maybe have a theme or I don't know, and do all this configuration for us. If you want to build something like that in Drupal, well, then you may as well be making this one-off thing because you're doing the exact amount of work. I think that it's a market that Drupal does not serve very well, but I think it could if something like this were to happen.
Yeah, I agree. I think that it just, I think the arguments are more around the mechanics of how it happens rather than whether it's a good idea.
Yeah.
But I think also besides the mechanics, it's also like, you know, I think there's the idea that, oh, well, these install profiles will just be configuration, but I could really easily see them, you know, spinning out into, you know, they're going to need some sort of custom code really. So at that point, you know, if we're including the ability to download them in core, you know, then we're basically saying, okay, these need to be core level. And now we've perhaps spread our already limited.
I don't agree with that. I don't think that they need to be core level if they're downloadable from that, you know. I think like the way that I would envision it, and I know we're getting on this huge tangent right here. I would just have an option like, hey, do you want to browse distributions and maybe have like the most popular distributions for the version that you're using, you know, showing up with like a little screenshot with a link to go to the webpage.
What's and then a distribution? We're getting into semantics again. Like that would be a tricky thing for a new user to even like grasp.
Yeah, exactly.
What's a distribution?
But they would figure that out. Like once they start looking at it, they would see something maybe? Called Open Church or Open Social, you know, or Open Atrium or Open Stereo Shop.
Well, we could just call them templates because nobody's gonna like bite you at that.
So how about we call them features?
How about we call them apps? Even better, we'll call them apps.
Contexts.
So I mean, one problem is putting up a gate, right? Do we just list? I mean, if their distributions are, if we have something new called install profiles, do we list every single one that's on Drupal.org?
Drupal.org is already a gate. So, like you guys know about just like getting your first module published up there is a whole nother podcast topic.
It's not if you've already been grandfathered.
I know.
Which is the problem. So there is code that is definitely not. Doesn't have to go through that process.
But at the same time, the way that you would present it to the user is you would have the most popular ones show up and then like obviously some type of filter, some type of live filter that would, you know, use some type of fancy JavaScript front end crap to, you know, narrow down your selection.
And there's all kinds of statistics. There's download information and usage information that gets reported back. I don't know if that's true for distributions, but probably.
No, like, it is.
There's got to be a way to do that.
Yeah,
there's other places in core. I mean, this is kind of analogous in a sense to the whole, you know, off the island debate that happened and the creation of the vendor, you know, the vendor directory and all of that kind of stuff where, you know, do we include, you know, third party code and you know, with Drupal? Yeah, you could look at it in a similar way to that, I think.
I mean, I think, you know, if the effort's going to be put forth, and obviously, like, it's whoever wants to put the effort. So if people think this is a good idea and they're going to put the effort, But I think, you know, it seems like we don't even have a module browser at this point inside Drupal.
Yeah.
And we're saying, let's put a whole installation browser. It's like,
well,
an installation browser might be easier.
I think it's the distribution or the feature browser is arguably much more accessible to a broader range of users than a module browser.
I would agree with that. Mm-hmm. Because
I mean, a module browser would be nice. That would be also nice to have, or a theme browser for that matter. But definitely, this kind of thing is like I'm starting a website, and I need to kind of have like out of the box most of what I need to have there. You know,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, so, I think if
go ahead, Tim.
I was going to say, I think if this idea takes off, there's going to need to be some sort of like not every distribution shows up there because people are going to get a very bad experience if.
It'll get very political if there's like powers that be that choose it, you know.
Yeah, no,
but what you could have is you could have like say like it'll only show stable releases, and because stable releases are covered under the security team, at that point at least you have an idea that hey, you know.
Oh, that's a good. Yeah, that's a pretty good gate. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we don't want like people's Drupal sites being turned into like a botnet to like take down Dyn.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right.
So let's move on here. So I have one final question for everybody here. So if you could have one wish from a magical Drupal genie, and this Drupal genie, who would be blue, would only allow you to fix a Drupal user experience issue because they are a Drupal UX genie. What would it be? But you could just like snap your fingers and at that point, bam, it would be fixed. And there, you know, everybody would be on board. The patch would be committed and all that stuff. You go first, Kevin.
Yeah. So mine, I'm going to bite off like a really, really big one and say, I would like Drupal's administrative interface to behave more like, or actually be a single page application. That has no latency and obviously there's always latency, but that has no page refreshes or round trips to the server. That's constantly, updating, doing things like possibly even auto saving. And just, you know, not having that sort of janky, every time I hit save, the page refreshes and everything shakes around like a big earthquake. And in fact, this kind of thing has been prototyped by people like Ed Faulkner from the Ember community who had an awesome presentation on this, in New Orleans, where he like essentially used Ember to do a whole bunch of administrative tasks with Drupal, with no page refreshes and, a lot of different kind of editing tasks. It was pretty awesome. I'd highly recommend anybody to go and look at it. But that would be my like sort of dream world that like, you know, you had a real sort of seamless, smooth, you know, single page app kind of experience when working on a Drupal site.
Cool. That's great. Okay, Ted.
Media Drupal library. Genie
media?
Media library, yeah.
I don't think the Drupal Genie could handle that.
Hopefully it will happen very soon. Hopefully it happened, in the next few releases, but.
Yeah.
It's something that if we had a genie, we might want to just hedge our bets and just have the genie do it just because it's taken so long. Might as well just get it done now with the genie. But yeah. The media team's working on it and they're going to, they're basically going to be our genie. So
there's some cool prototypes actually in the issue for that. People wanted to take a look at them. There's some really nice stuff happening.
All right. Matt Cleave.
Oh man, the Drupal genie. honestly, I haven't looked at Drupal 8, so I can't say it's not fixed. But in a recent project, I was dealing with some string translations, and I remember that to be not the easiest process. So I would love for that to be magical and
easy. It's easier now, much easier than it was, but it's still not super easy.
Yeah. So I would love that to be simple.
Okay. Okay, but that seems more like of a developer experience issue as opposed to a usability issue.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure that the Drupal UX genie will deny that. So why don't you think of something?
Oh, no.
He only gives three wishes, Mike, so what's yours?
Because if I want to be able to not have to have a developer do that task, right? Ooh, if I'm have a site manager, I want to be able to go in and translate, you know, my interface for my users. I don't want to have a developer do it. You know?
All right. We'll let that one, the Drupal genie, we'll let that one slide. So with my own here, to tell you the truth, I really like the idea of the install profile. So like part of where I think Drupal can go is as opposed to kind of going to more, you know, more expensive sites, like reach down to where WordPress is coming up and try to get into those less expensive sites that could be maybe tackled through an install profile distribution type thing. And I think that if the distributions or AKA install profiles were available through the installation process, I think that would bring more people into Drupal because it would be like the example content where people would say like, all right, you know, I want to build my stereo shop here and I want to see how this is done. And then they can get in and dissect that. I think that would be fantastic. So that is my answer.
So is your answer, you want the install profile and the first choice is WordPress?
It could be. That's something that solves a lot of real world cases. Yeah. You know,
no, I think it would be good if we had a simple blog one.
Yeah.
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 So you weren't talking literal WordPress. You're talking like something that functions similarly to WordPress.
Yeah, WordPress as a joke, but something similar.
I could see that actually working. I mean, the standard way people talk about it is you use Drupal if you want to build a WordPress. So like literally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. People have been doing that, but like with Drupal multi-sites and things like that. Sure. I want to build a whole platform for blog sites, not just one blog site.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you, Ted. Thank you, Kevin.
Thanks, guys.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having us on.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Matt Cleave.
Thank you, Mike Herschel.
My name is Mike Herschel, and I'm here to say I love Drupal in a major way.